Welcome to Table Talk, the podcast that takes an in-depth look at the dynamic and exciting restaurant world. We sit down with industry leaders as they share best practices, highlight smart solutions, and discuss strategies for growth, ultimately helping food service operators learn how to affect positive change and grow their business. Now, here is your host, editor and publisher of Food Service and Hospitality Magazine, Rosanna Kyra.
So it's my pleasure to have with me Jean-François Archambault, founder and CEO of La Table des Chefs. Bonjour, Jean-François, and welcome to Table Talk podcast.
Hi.
I'm really happy that you could join us here today. I know you're a very busy person, and we're going to talk about food waste and some other social entrepreneur initiatives that you have going. To start off, I wanted to introduce Jean-François. He is the founder and CEO of La Table des Chefs. And after graduating in hotel management and culinary training, Jean-François became a manager in the hospitality industry for Fairmont Hotels and Resorts, and then Marriott, where he worked for more than 10 years. In 2002, he founded the social organization La Table des Chefs, and his hope was that he wanted to socially mobilize chefs and cooks because he believes in their incredible ability to intervene on the issues around food waste, hunger, culinary education, and at the same time to address its many challenges. La Table des Chefs now recovers more than 300 tons of edible excess food from the chefs and feeds more than 800,000 Canadians in need annually. The social business also runs culinary education programs with chefs in more than 175 public high schools and foster care units, reaching an incredible more than 3,500 teenagers in need annually. Jean-François's work has been recognized by the Prime Minister's Social Innovation Award in 2015, and he recently received the Meritorious Service Cross from the Governor General of Canada, as well as the Gold Medal of Excellence from the Lieutenant General of Quebec. Jean-François is a true social entrepreneur, and he's dedicated his work and scaling the social impact of the organization La Table. And it's also now present in France and Mexico, which is just pretty amazing. Jean-François is a real foodie, and his passion for food and gastronomy has really led him to become the manager of famous Canadian pastry chef Patrice Demers. He currently co-owns Patrice Patissier, the chef's first boutique in Montreal, which is also known as one of the best sweet destinations in the city. And on a personal note, Jean-François is the father of three girls and most recently two twins. So he has his hands full, to say the least. So welcome, Jean-François, and thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to be here today. So Jean-François, reading, you know, through that bio, it's very clear you've done a lot of work on the food waste area in the industry, and it's become a real passion project for you. When I look at the industry, I think food waste has always been an issue, but it's been kind of a quiet issue in the background. And recently, in the last few years, it's really become a lot more top of mind. First of all, would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think if I look at when I started in the early 2000s, it was not a popular subject. It wasn't at the top of the agenda of the hotel managers, which I tried to convince of the idea. Mm-hmm. The chefs were welcoming it, but after, I think the first hope that I got was from the meeting planners, because they were my clients. I was working in sales in the hotel industry. And right. They were starting to talk about zero waste events and hotel managers. They what the hell is that, you know? and they would prepare and think about not using plastic bottles. And they were kind of the innovators, the meeting planners in our industry, and put pressure on our industry to be more proactive on this subject. And I think that had a big impact on the evolution of things for us and helping us to convince the hotel industry to join in.
Well, that's an interesting perspective. I never heard that it was the meeting planners, which is great to know. And I guess this was in the early 2000s. But when I look at the industry today, a lot of that initiative is being fueled, I think, by more of the younger generation, the millennials. Do you think they've had an impact on that as well?
I think through the education, we've for sure transferred that to the following generations. And I think through education and mobilization, I think we were able to do it. An example is when we started, we went directly in the hotel management schools, the culinary schools, to run a program where we would involve them in preparing meals for the people in need. It wasn't out of excess food, but it was a way for us to get into the schools and engage the conversation with the future generation of young cooks and young chefs. And I think that helped get the message out. And then I think they got the message, but also they wanted to be active members and do their part. So I think the pressure we feel today comes from that effort in education and working towards the solution ourselves. And I think they will go further than we could ever gone, you know. So I think we're pushing the limits every day, but the next generation will be going even further than we are.
Okay, that's great. The food industry, you know, the food service industry and also retail, I suppose, has often been accused of being one of the most wasteful industries. Based on your experience, is that true?
I think it's a strong statement. I think that it is because of the volume of food that we handle. I think that it might sound like it. I think for sure that because we're handling that amount of food and because we're feeding so many in either in the hotels or in the corporate cafeterias or in the hospital cafeterias, I think that creates that volume. And so I think the impact that we can have is, you know, for sure the volume is great, but the impact on the same side could be also very great. So I think it goes together.
Well, I think, you know, when you look at research, research that I've seen estimates that the total of both types of waste in the Canadian food value chain equates to about 35.5 million metric tons. But they're saying that out of that total, which sounds like a lot, obviously, and is a lot, 32% is avoidable. But interestingly, when you look at hotels, restaurants, institutions, they really comprise a relatively small portion of those overall numbers at 3.1%. And 1.4% of potentially avoidable food loss. So obviously those percentages still represent a significant dollar value for the industry of about $7.1 billion annually. So how can restaurant owners and operators and chefs work together to reduce that loss? Because that's a lot of money that we're wasting through food waste.
And there's two things. I think that pure loss of money is when you look at the waste, I think when you look, let's say, take an example of the hotel industry. We have a corporate client coming. There are 200 people on a corporate meeting. They order food for 200 and they show up 150 people. They still have paid for 200.
Right.
Food was prepared for 200. It was paid for 200, so there was no loss of money for the hotel. The customer paid for that. So I think that on our side, that part is where we come in, and that's where we take that 50 person that didn't show up and in that particular event, and in another hotel, a 20 that didn't show up another day, or they had to fly back because of a snowstorm, or, mm-hmm. you know, these situations are... with edible excess food. So really food that would have been served, that could not be served, that wasn't touched by customers, that we recover. And that's the type of food that I know it's not excessive amounts of food. When you look at the numbers we have right now and been working for the last 15 years on. It's close to 400 tons of food annually. It's nothing compared to the amount of food that Second Harvest would get from the supermarkets or from the farmers, you know, which are more in thousands of tons. But still, our industry needs to do its part. And I think that the difference is, I think there is quality food prepared by quality culinary teams in cafeterias and in hotels, and we can take that quality food and enhance the quality of food that the food security sector gets. And I think that's an impact also that's great when we see that food going to food shelters and you see the cooks and the chefs getting that food. They're so happy because that food was prepared out of amazing ingredients, great ingredients. And I think that's what for me was the flash is like, we're working with top ingredients, we're preparing all that food, and still in the end, there is some left. And we need that food to be eaten. It needs to serve its purpose. Its sole purpose of feeding people. So for me, that's the part of the food that we recover, and that I know there's an opportunity to do even more all across our country. The other part is the food waste that is too late to recover. So there is that food that either was left too long on buffet or was left too long that you lost and you broke the cold chain or the hot chain, and there is no risk to take out of that. And that's where I think that other initiatives like composting could be put into our sector. And if not everybody is doing it right now, I think there really is an opportunity to look at that. But for sure, for me, food first needs to serve its sole purpose and should be directed when it's safe, and our program is kind of putting the structure around that and really creating a process that is simple, turnkey, and that can be implemented in any food outlet across the country.
So, I mean, that sounds wonderful. And since, I mean, I think you started the company in 2002, right?
Yeah.
So when you started the company, what was the impetus for you to start this? Because really at the time, there really wasn't, there were a few similar programs, but it wasn't across the board. What made you decide this was the time to change this reality? Tell me a little bit about Table des Chefs and really how you got your start.
So when I started, it was hard because I was working in the hotel industry. And when I was going to, let's say, other hotels and engaging that conversation, people would look at me, why is he doing this? You know, I was working in sales, so people could say, oh, he wants to gain interest in his hotel or helping sell more because he's doing social work or philanthropic work. And so I had some problem because you would go to the competitor and try to engage in that conversation. And it wasn't the best of the situation. So for me, it was hard because I wasn't getting a lot of success, but I knew that I had something and I knew that I had to pursue. And 2 years prior, I'd lost my mom from cancer. My mom had fought for 10 years. She was diagnosed at 39 with a lymphoma. And she died, unfortunately, in 2000 when I was working at Chateau Vaudreuil, where it was my first work as a sales manager. And then when she died in 2000 and at 49, I went on to work at the Fairmont Tremblant as a sales manager. That's where I made friends with Laurent Mio, who was the executive chef there. And he was my sales coordinator's husband. And so we had a couple of meals home and we talked a little bit about the idea. And that's where I convinced Laurent to help me out and think through the process. And a year after, I was moved by Fairmont to become director of sales for Eastern Canada, and I moved to Montreal, back to Montreal, and I joined the executive board of Moisson Montréal So the Montreal Food Bank. I wanted to understand the other side of things and how I was going to get my ideas around and if it was going to create the impact that I thought it would. Because I knew there was food that could be delivered. I just wanted to make sure that it was really needed and wanted. So I got on the executive board and I really tried to understand how a food bank works and how we could close these gaps of food shortage that they were mentioning, sometimes 20%, 30% that they were missing food and they couldn't deliver food to their organization. They were covering about 250 community organizations. So I got Mosso Montréal on the conversation on a committee, and I got the people from the food safety, so from the Ministry of Agriculture. And that's where I met Joanne Twigg, who was the in charge of 80 food inspectors in Montreal and Laval. And I convinced her to help me out to structure the food security charter of our program. So basically, at first, before we'd recover any sort of food, we needed to convince the chefs that the food security, where the food inspectors would agree to have that food recover, and they would not fall on them to say, we don't agree with this, you can't do this, it's not safe, because this is what was coming, is that a lot of the issue was around liability.
Right.
Food poisoning. Is this safe? Is this something that I will be in trouble with? Then all the reputation aspect, you know, my first boss at the Chateau Vaudreuil, when I talked to him about this the first time, he said, I've worked 35 years to build the reputation of this establishment. I give the blankets, I give the mattress. There's no risk with that. You know, I know that this food is good, but I don't want to take any chance. So I really needed to get the food inspection agency around the table to make sure that when we go back to the chefs, they hear the message that we build a program that is built for chefs and for the sector. It was really clear for me that if we wanted to be successful, it needed to be built for chefs and cooks and for culinary teams and not built for the community sector. Because the purpose was to organize the sector so that it was easy, that we would provide turnkey containers and think through every aspect of it. So that when we implement, we only have, like I always say, we only have 15 minutes with a chef to explain. And so he gets it. And then after that, he commits to it. And then he integrates the process, which is pretty easy, basically. But we have really 15 minutes, and then we have to convince the management team that. So if we were successful with the food inspection agency back then, I knew we were going to be successful along the way. But it took still a lot of time. And then in 2005, the Bell Center came in. Pierre Boivin, the president of the Montreal Canadiens. I was opening hotels for Marriott at that time. I was director of sales, and I was struggling in getting the message out, but I was working 70 hours a week, opening two hotels near the airport in Montreal, a courtyard and a residence in Ville-Saint-Laurent. And I got help for a fundraising dinner to raise money to hire someone finally and to do the work for us. And then Pierre Boivin, the president of the Montreal Canadiens, asked me to come in his office one morning and said, you know, we're wasting a lot of food here at the Bell Center. It was the biggest food outlet in the city. And he said, if your program works, I'll give you a chance. And I'll have you work with my team, with Gilles Saint-Hilaire, the executive chef, and see how you can implement. And if it's going to be successful, we're going to implement it in the property. And it worked. You know, we worked for about 4 months with the team to analyze the amount of food that was wasted, that was thrown away. The amount of food we thought was still good. And so we toured all the executive suite. We gathered the food. It was a shame because we had to throw it away this time, but we knew it was good. It was to work in the future. So we presented a project. I was doing my MBA at the time, and we presented an ops project to the Bell Center, and they agreed to implement. And then we got the whole 134 executive suites at the Bell Center on board, and we recovered about 80,000 meals, you know, the first year. So that was kind of my first customer or client, and that convinced me that if I was going to convince the Bell Center on day one, like not day one because I was working on it for the last 4 years,
right.
But I knew I was going to be successful after I convinced the Bell Center. And then the reputation aspect was going to fade away and was not going to be an issue anymore. At first, when we had one chef, and we say, you can talk to him, you know, if I was going to a chef and say, if you have questions, I already have a chef that's into the program. Now I have more than 100 chefs and cooks and culinary teams involved with the program across the country. I pick and choose, you know, you can call pretty much anybody that will tell you how they're doing it, how they're integrating it. And for sure, one thing we have to understand is we're really the missing link between the community sector, the food banks and the culinary teams. And the way we build the program is really, like I said, build for chefs so that we talk the same language. We did it for them and they understand where it comes from and they understand the purpose of it. And they really appreciate the work that's been done around it. And then the food banks on the other side, when you speak with Second Harvest, that's already doing an amazing job, and all other community organizations, they also feel safe because they know we come from the culinary industry. They know we have I have a culinary background. They know I've been working, you know, when I get out that my dad was the legal advisor to all the chefs community for 30 years in Quebec, you know, that makes you a little bit safer. And he was at the start of it with me to help me out to get that issue out. But the liability aspect was really, really a key aspect to go through before we get to convince anybody.
So when you talk about the liability, I guess the liability comes into play because once you take that food outside where it's created, you run into issues of food safety. And is it actually safe when people are eating the food that, you know, has it been warmed up properly, all of that? Can you kind of expand a little bit on what that had to entail from a liability issue and what you had to convince them?
Yeah, so I think the issue was that when I explained earlier that let's say you have a banquet for 200 and then 150 people show up, you know, if we recover the 50 portions that are not being served and that are paid for, and we put them aside, you know, would have these 50 people been sick? You know, if they would have eaten it, no. The question is no. So why would someone outside of the hotel be sick if we distribute that food the following day? And the conversation was about, you know, when you cook a home meal at home and you're hosting for Thanksgiving or you're hosting a nice meal on the weekends with family, and you cook a little bit more than you thought for, and you end up having food right until the next Wednesday. Well, imagine a top chef that's been trained, that has all the knowledge on food safety, that knows when its food came in, raw food came in and whole food came in, and knows when they prepped it and knows when they cooked it and they warmed it. And it's first batch cooking. So there was no reheating. There was no, that all of that come into play. And I think that is in the chef's knowledge and the culinary team's knowledge, what food can be taken out and what food can't. And there's no risk to take. And so when we have that conversation with the food inspection agency, they understand that we're not going to take any risks. They understand that we can put the limits where it's still safe, and that we know the type of food that we can recover. We started recovering that food, so we do have a clear example in the past of what we were recovering at first. And then freezing comes into play also, which is great, because first batch cooking, when you do have some food left, you can freeze that food and then you really stop the process, and then you can have that food recovered frozen so that the community organization can plan better when they're going to serve these meals. So that's also a key factor of improvement in the way we've been doing things, and also in what are we recovering it. So community sector sometimes had their own containers going to the establishment, you know, they provided the reusable containers that where contamination can happen. So the process needed to be taught also in a way of having a single container, single use container that's recyclable. So the aluminum bins are really, really the key elements. It's those lasagna containers, 10 portion container that we normally use. And then we ask the community organization to recycle them after and just have a single use so that you minimize the risk of cross-contamination.
Right. And
those containers are provided to the establishment. The only container that we can reuse is a food grade container that can have soup, and then it's food grade plastic. It's reusable, but it has to be clean. And what we do is when the community organization bring it back to the hotels, the chefs, they put it into the dishwasher again, so that it really eliminates the risk, any risk of cross-contamination. But the process really needed to be taught in a way that's easy, and also that engage the food inspection agency so that they do understand that there's cooks and banquet staff that can have their eyes on the food, the in and out of the kitchen, and how long it stayed there, and where the risk is and where the limits are. So that's where we train the teams in the hotels. But basically, it's just refreshing because it's basically things that they've learned in either in their education or in their programs. That they have in their own establishment. You know, when you look at EcoSure inspection that's done pre-inspection in our industry, in the hotel industry, and in the food service industry, sometimes they're even more. I wouldn't say severe, but they're more. It's sometimes more difficult to pass these tests that are pre-test by the hotel chains or just to make sure that you're going to go through the regular food inspection from the food inspectors. So sometimes if we work with them and we have them understand that they're. That the program has been in place for over 10 years, and we're working with the culinary teams, and we're working to understand that the limits. Where do we set the limits? It puts everybody in a safe zone where they're, and also the community organization that sometimes we're not used to getting that type of food, and they see the work that we're doing, and they really enjoy. The type of food that the diversity and the type of food and the quality of food that we're able to recover for them.
So let me ask you this. Can you walk us through a scenario? You mentioned the Bell Center being one of your first customers. Would they provide food, would food recovery be part of every single game night or every single event night that is there? How would the scenario work? Can we go through a little bit of an overview of that?
Yeah, for sure. So basically, yes, it happens every game. There's food that's recovered every game and every event. For sure, hockey games recover more foods than shows, music shows, mm-hmm. Because there's more people. And also, how it happens is that we have trained the service staff from each suite, and we basically they're responsible to keep their eyes on the food all the time, which they already did, you know, and the warmers, you know, making sure that they're in place and that we're not breaking the cold chain and the hot chain if we have to keep things remain hot for right until the recovery. They have the containers in their suites, and so it's handy. It's there, the stickers to identify the content. And so at the end of the second period, normally they will go back to the people in the suite and say, you know, everyone, I'm going to recover the food, and people know. So we have explained through communication with the Canadians to their customers the impact of the program, mm-hmm. It can have on the community, and people are so excited about it because They've been wanting that, and they've been putting pressure on the administration of the Canadians and at the Bell Centre to do that. So finally, that we're in, they're so happy about getting involved. So when you go to them, at first there was kind of a sentiment where, oh, I'm going to disturb the customer. They're paying for that food, you know. Let's not ask them anything, you know, because we just want them to be happy. And it's the same thing in the 5-star properties. You know, they're paying so much for that food. Let's take the. And the conversation is the opposite now. You know, it's changed. So it's more, I'm so happy that you're thinking about this and that we can have an impact on our community through that meeting. And so I think that's where we are now. And so the containers are there, and they put the food in the containers. They make sure to wash their hands before they do this. There is a process of food handling that needs to be respected and that they're trained for. And then after that, the service, there's a waiter that comes by with a trolley, with a cart, and picks up all the containers from all the 134 suites on the third floor, on the fifth floor, brings that back to the fridge. And we have shelves, rolling shelves in the fridge where all the containers are put back, and it's brought down back to the main fridge. And then the following morning, a community organization with which we've linked and connected the Bell Centre with, and we've agreed with that organization that they would be chosen to do that because they have the capacity, because we know they're going to serve the meals, right. The quantity of the meals. They serve 2,000 meals every day. It's the Welcome Hall mission. So Welcome Hall mission comes with their refrigerated truck at 7:30 in the morning, following a game. They pick up the shelves, and they rotate the shelves. So they bring shelves, and they bring back the shelves for the following games, and they bring that food back to their community organization, their main kitchen, and they serve these meals after each event. And when they have in excess, they have other community, smaller community organization around them, which they share with. And that's how we do it. And after that, every game, they monitor the food that they've picked up. So basically the number of container, and they go back to the platform, our web platform, to put down the number of meals that they recovered. And it goes back to the Bell Center's side of the platform. So and they can have their social impact in terms of the number of meals that they've recovered. And you can translate that into tons of food. So the environmental impact also of not sending that food to landfills is also doubling the impact.
So that's an amazing process. And I think, you know, I'm interested in the fact that you actually make the guests in those suites aware of this. I wasn't aware that you do that, that I thought it was kind of more in the back of the, you know, in the back of the house type of thing. So you actually tell people in these suites that there is a food recovery process in place for the evening.
Yeah, and we did the same thing with MLSC at BMO Field and at the Scotiabank Arena when we launched a program with the Real Food Rescue Program with the help of Hellman's, which we implemented at both venues. And the amount of food that's there, you need to add the Raptors game. So you double the amount of games that you have, and you almost double the amount of food that you recover. So with Chris Zielinski there, it's going so well, and Chris was so excited. But it happened about, you know, 12 years after the implementation at the Bell Center, and it's something that when you look at the whole country, we have a big country to travel. So, you know, it can take a lot of time to scale a program like this. Sometimes you do have some local organization doing a part of that work. But I know that when we come in, we usually enhance or the amount of food that an organization can recover. Like, for example, when we arrived in Vancouver, the Vancouver Food Bank, we had met 2 years prior, and we tried to get the program in. They had the food runners. They've been running the food runners for about 12 years, and they were a bit struggling in getting the message out because it was so hard to talk to the chefs, and there was a change in chefs. And so I came to the table and to discuss with them and see how we could handle that relationship, handle that side of the relationship, and engage the chefs. That's what we do best. And say, what in the end do you need at the Vancouver Food Bank? It's food. And so if you're struggling in getting that food, you know, defies the purpose. If we manage that relationship for you and we make sure that we provide the containers, we do that part, we work together, and you guys can do the recoveries, and you'll have more food at the end because we'll engage them solidly into the program. And it's not just going to be always say that sometimes when you go to a chef, you're kind of overwhelmed or you're like intimidated of coming into a kitchen. Mm-hmm. I came into a kitchen the first time I was 9 years old. So when I knew that you had to break that door and go into the kitchen to talk to these chefs. And so sometimes community organization will say, you know, here we are in your community. If you think about us, you know, here's our number. We need food. And a chef will go back to his daily routine and will for sure be sensible to the organization, the local organization, but sometimes will not think about it because they'll go back to their routine and they will forget.
Right.
If you do have a process that's in place, which we have, we put in a food recovery process in the establishment where every week you recover, and you know there's going to be a recovery, a set recovery every week, mm-hmm. on the same day, you kind of put your process and make sure that you're successful because there is food every week in these establishments for sure. I've been there. I've been in the high management of Marriott and Fairmont, and I've seen the amount of food. It has reduced, I think, a little bit because of all of that too. So that, I think that's a good thing. I think it's not about, and that's what I say to the partners, is we're not looking for getting more food every year. You know, our objective is not set, okay, let's double the amount of food that we're recovering. You're not recovering enough. You know, you should be recovering more. For sure, right. If they didn't understand the program and they're not recovering all the food they can, we're going to have this discussion. But if they are doing the best they can and they're doing everything, and the following year they're reduced 15%. Well, that's the objective also, is to reduce food waste. So for us, it has that impact. And I think that's a good thing because in the end, if we know there's still going to be food in the end, we're not going to be able to cut it out 100%.
Right.
If we reduce it to the minimum, we're still going to get food. And in the end, I think that's better for everyone.
So Jean-François, you've been talking about the Bell Center a little bit, obviously being in Montreal and getting this across the country. How many companies are you now working with to do this food recovery?
We have more than 100.
How many clients do you have?
Yeah, we have over 120 links between hotels, hospitals, catering agencies, bakeries, and it's mainly, I would say, we now have around 30 establishments outside of Quebec, in Toronto, in Ottawa, in Winnipeg, in Edmonton, in Calgary, and also in Vancouver. Vancouver has been so amazing last year. We've signed up the Rogers Arena, and the BC Place, and also the JW Park and the Douglas Hotel, the Fairmont Waterfront, and it's been amazing the response we've got from the Hotel Association also in Vancouver. I think there's a lot of interest in what we do, and I think it's all about working together and getting the message out, and we have an opportunity to do that now. So I think it's we also have an association with Restaurants Canada. We have an association with the Canadian Hotel Association through the Green Key Initiative. We're part of that program. So I think now the focus would be to take what we've done best in Quebec for many years, and in the last couple of years, which we've almost doubled in amount of food recovered, because we got the Ministry of Agriculture and the Quebec government to support the program. I think we need to engage that conversation with provincial governments across the country and get the same level of involvement from them so that they can support our industry to get the program rolling in all the establishment that we can.
So right now you would define yourself as national. You're no longer just in Quebec.
Yeah, we're national. I mean, is one establishment in every city brings you national? I think I have more ambition than that. So
right.
I think that the goal is to be national and as strong in everywhere else than we are in Quebec, because we know that every city center has hotels, has hospitals, has catering agencies where we can have the program in. And there is some places where you do have the food banks very active. So we'll just engage a conversation on sharing best practice and look at how we can work in synergy. And other places where there's nothing that's being done and where we'll have a full impact on the thing. So that's the idea, is not to replace anybody across the country that's doing great work. It's to share best practice and make sure that we're all together covering all the opportunities to capture that food and make sure that we're reducing the food waste and feeding people that need it with that quality food. The perfect example right now and to bring us nationally is the conversation we've been having with Fairmont and Marriott. And lately, Marriott has been committing to rolling it out nationally. So we're working with we'll be working with the corporate team, Kathy Stevens and the team to get the program out to the corporate establishment, so the managed properties, and then after that we'll get the franchised hotel to get in. But I think you know, when we look at the amount of hotels, which is I think more than 300 hotels across Canada with under Marriott now with all the acquisition, I think it's a great opportunity. And you know, I've worked for both companies, for Fairmont and Marriott, so for me going back to them and with my social project, which I'm now doing full-time and with my team, I think it's very exciting for me to look at the perspective of the future and finally getting some traction on this program.
So Jean-François, when I hear you, you're talking a lot about bigger companies like Marriott, Fairmont, the Bell Centre, Rogers. How about a small independent restaurant? Can you work with them and what they're doing? Because obviously from a restaurant perspective, the food waste is a little different. You don't have meals for 150 and 20 people don't show up. It's a little different when it's individual customers ordering. So can you work with independent restaurants as well?
So in Montreal, we work with small pastry shops, which prepare fresh every day, and they can't put back the food the following day. So
right.
We do recover those pastries that need to be fresh every day and that are smaller scale. And what we do is we match them with smaller organization, because you sometimes have a women's shelter that has maybe 10 women. A smaller bake shop will do it's a great impact to them, because every day they can recover 10, right. 15 danishes or whatever, so that every day they can have them and be matched to. So what we do is we look at the matches we make and the connections we make. So I was talking about the Bell Center with 1,000 portions every game. Well, the Welcome Hall Mission serves 2,000 meals, which makes sense. But a smaller restaurant or a smaller unit, which recovered 25 portions every mm-hmm. day or every 2 days or 3 days, will be linked to a smaller shelter that held right. 10, 15 people. And you do have those shelters all across the cities. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's also to think about, because sometimes there was match make where, organization are already receiving bread and we were linking them with bakeries and they were already getting bread from the food bank and they, mm-hmm. they didn't want to get those fancy bread. So we found other organizations. So our role is also to making these connections work and make sure that it makes sense.
So you work creatively to find the best match with missions or other groups that you want to work with. You help in that respect.
Yeah, and we talk with the food banks, because so most of the time they will be registered to the food bank, and mm-hmm. the food bank has the knowledge of what's happening in their turf. So basically, when you look at Second Harvest or Moisson Montréal or mm-hmm. Laval Food Bank, we'll talk with Laval Food Bank and say, Do you want to recover the food, or do you want to have a direct link to your community organization?
Right.
And what we do most of the time is even though we go to the food bank, we keep the food bank informed of what amount of food and who we are delivering the food to, so that they have also a clear understanding of the amount of food that goes directly to these organizations, so that it can be fair for everyone to receive food.
That makes sense.
You do have some organizations that are on wait list and that are not getting any food right now, that are in need of food, and that's where you want to have also an impact.
Okay. So I found it interesting too that you also run culinary education programs in high schools along with chefs. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. So when I was on the executive board of Moisson Montréal, I there was a public health study that came out on the loss of culinary knowledge and skills, mostly in underprivileged areas. So I started the conversation with the director of public health and back in 2005. And at first, you know, La Table was a side project. It was kind of an idea that I had, and I really didn't know that I was going to be working full time for that and leaving the hotel industry to do this. There was when that study came out, I was thinking, you know, I want to mobilize the chefs on food recovery, but who has the most knowledge and skills on the culinary side? And it's chefs and cooks. So for me, it was now clearer than we were creating a movement out of a group of people that really could have an impact on both sides, on feeding people and on educating. So for me, also the passion was key. I knew these chefs from growing older and going into these kitchens and meeting them from an early age. You know, I was 9 when I came into the first kitchen with Normand Laprise at Citrus when he was 24 and he had his first restaurant. And I saw the passion, and I knew that with passion you could lead and you could be successful. So I knew if I was going to be successful in food education, I was going to get these chefs down in the schools. And I saw at the same time that home economics was taken out of the school curriculum back in 2004. And mm-hmm. So I got a conversation with the Montreal school district, the director of the school district. And she said, I would want to start culinary workshops in these schools in extracurricular activities. And she said, I'll get you in the 4 schools that need it the most out of my district. And if you're successful, I'll support you. You know, I'll try to find you the funding and help you to grow the program. And we were very successful. We were in Saint-Henri, Hochelaga-Maisonneuve, Saint-Michel, and it was really hard, but we managed to do it. And the kids were so excited and very responsive to this. So we got from 4 schools to 10 schools the following year. And then we got the interest of a huge foundation. You know, Videotron was sold, and the Chagnon family invested in public health through a match of the Quebec government funding and philanthropic funding from their foundation to support programs, food programs and food education programs, and also healthy habits programs. And we got a huge funding from them, around $200,000, to get to 30 schools. And then from 30 schools, we got the Secretary of Youth to support the program after, and then we got to 60 schools, and then we got now we got to 100 schools after, and we got Sobeys to become a partner, Saputo and all other partners, and then we managed to get also other family foundations to support. And what we do is really basically is we created a program called the Kitchen Brigades. And we come into a school where, you know, there's arts, there's music, and there's basketball, and you can get into the school play or the school band and the basketball team. But the kids that are excited about food in the school didn't have any place to go. And so you had those old OMEC kitchens that are not useful anymore, that were not used. And we started back the ovens, and we got some flavors and smell, good smell around in the school back. And by pairing them with a chef for a 24-week program called Kitchen Brigades. And so getting 25 kids excited about food to have a place and express that passion for food and be contagious, you know, and become food ambassadors in their schools. And we got very successful. We got a Hire and Chef competition between the schools, and to name the best brigades in the province. And we got some great chefs involved also in coming in every school across the province. Now we're going to be this fall in 180 public high schools, and we got the government to match a dollar per dollar out of the Ministry of Agriculture. So we got a government grant out of the Ministry of Agriculture of $5 million on 5 years to scale to over 200 public high school, which is one out of two public high school in our province will have the Brigades program by 2022-2023 school year. And we got the McConnell Foundation to fund a pilot project in six other provinces outside and translate everything. So we call it Les Brigades Culinaires in French and Kitchen Brigades in English. And we are now in the Toronto area, in Ottawa, in Winnipeg, in Calgary, New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, Newfoundland, and also BC. So we're very, very excited because we have 20 schools outside of Quebec in six provinces. And we are putting together our scaling strategy. We're right now mapping the needs to create our scaling strategy to get to about 100 schools outside of Quebec within the next 5 years.
That's amazing, Jean-François. I mean, what you're doing is so exciting. I mean, it's great for the kids who are learning about food, but it's also a way for the kids to be introduced to cooking, perhaps as a career down the road.
And we didn't look at it like this at first, you know. It kind of surprised me because when we know we have a shortage of cooks in our industry, and it's generalized, you know, across the country. When I travel and I speak with the chefs, you know, that we try to get involved. And when I got, you know, the top culinary school to come to us and say, the director of that school in Montreal, Isaf Rila, came to me and said, Jean-François, I want to speak to your 4,000 kids that are in those schools because we're not getting the traction to get them registered to the programs, the exactly. professional programs. And so I really, really didn't. I knew from the program we talk about this. We kind of go on the subject of this could be a career, but we really put it more into a personal it's more of a personal gain for of sure. knowledge and skills yeah. for your personal needs. But for sure, we do have some kids that are so excited that they want to pursue a career. So for us now, we're doing these introduction, and I think we will more and more welcome professional cooks to come and talk about the industry and talk about why they're working and what they find exciting, and open the door to this opportunity.
It's amazing because, as you said, you didn't think of that initially. You were just doing it for another reason. But I think the fact that now this is happening is a bonus for everybody.
Yeah, and imagine if it's only 10% or even 5%, this means that we're getting 200 to 300 kids registered into the culinary school just in Quebec annually. I think that's good news for the current situation.
It's great news. So let me say on that note, what do you see as the next steps in your journey to educate the industry on food recovery programs? I know you've said you've got 120 businesses signed up. You've expanded across the country. It's hotels, it's restaurants, it's hospitals. What's the next step and how big do you think it can become?
So I think that we have been in the last year and a half, we've had great opportunity to talk about this and try to mobilize people. And I think, you know, what I feel, you know, through the conversation we've had at RC Show and the leadership award we've got and the opportunity we got to talk about this. And I think people are very excited. That's what I feel. And I think it still needs to be an individual door-to-door conversation, and mm-hmm. that's what makes it a little bit harder is and longer. Is we need still, even if you're so excited about it, we still need to sit down together with your team and with the operation team and the management and also the culinary team, so that we at least spend half an hour together to go through it and then start the process. And I think that that's what we're going to be doing is if we continue to feel that interest and we start going to these all the establishments and all the potential donors, I think that will be the key. And so the more people we will meet and the more people, and it, you know, it's not about getting them all together in a room, because still you'll still need to go back to individual operation and at least have that conversation individually. So it is long, it is a longer process, but you know, in the end, when you look at what we've done and how we've done it over the last 15 years, I think you look back and you see that we went from 1 to 120 and going on more. So, and they're still there, you know, they're still engaged in there.
Part
so
of the program,
I think each and every one will add, will be there. I wouldn't say forever, but they'll be there for the long run. So let's not go too fast, but let's for sure not stop to meet everybody every week, meet more hotel managers and culinary teams and in cafeterias, corporate cafeterias, hospitals, catering agencies and hotels and restaurants. And that's how we will gain traction and impact. So that's what's exciting for us is we do have these global conversation, and I think it create awareness. So it helps us to to then knock at the doors and be welcome. And so you kind of help us to open these doors. I think we will still need to have these individual conversation and make sure that everybody feels safe and that they know they're engaged with us. And that it's not just a conversation we're having, but really put it into action. And then on the food education side, I think there is opportunities for partnering opportunities with more provincial and local organization that want to support their local high school to get the program of the Kitchen Brigade. So also I think that will be the work for us will be to finish that mapping around this spring, and then you know go on the road to present and pitch that scaling strategy to bring the program everywhere in the country.
And how many people are part of your team to do this? I can't imagine you doing this all on your own. You have a big team or a small team?
So now the operation budget of La Table went from when I jumped in full time as the first person to jump in to this adventure, we were raising around $150,000 a year back in 2005. Mm-hmm. And now we have a $5.7 million operating budget, and we have 25 staff. Full time
okay.
working for us, and so about four staff on the food recovery program, a lot more working on food education because it's a different approach. We do have Raleigh that's working out of Toronto, so we do have staff now outside of Quebec, and Raleigh is working also with volunteers. So we're going to expand the team outside of the province. We're looking at how we will continue to grow the team and really capture all the opportunities across the country.
Well, that's fabulous. You've done an amazing job. And unfortunately, we have run out of time. But I did want to thank you for being part of the podcast series here today, but also thank you for everything that you're doing to educate the industry, to create awareness, and to really solve some of these social issues that we have. I think, you know, your industry journey has been really interesting. And I think it's probably safe to say that you've become a social entrepreneur over time. And that's a huge, huge job and a huge, huge task to take over. But you've really created a movement that's influential, and you've got so much passion for leading this charge. So a big thank you for doing all of that. And good luck with taking it across Canada. And we'll keep tabs and see how you're doing over time. But thank you so much, Jean-François. You've done an amazing job.
Thank you for sharing this. And for me, it's all about passion and hard work. It's when you put those two together, you can go a long way.
That's for sure. Well, thanks again. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
We appreciate you joining us for this episode of the Table Talk Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, we'd love for you to rate and review our show. Also, make sure you never miss an episode by clicking the subscribe button. For additional resources related to today's episode, please visit our website, foodserviceandhospitality.com. Until next time.